Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to River Cafe Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
Come with me into the River Cafe. You see the pink wood oven in the distance, the yellow kitchen. Cocktails are being made, prosciutto is being sliced, and there is the quiet buzz of the beginning of an evening, food and friends in a beautiful space. Welcome to River Cafe Table 4 with me, Ruthie Rogers. I'm sitting here with Edward Enefeld, and you're the editor of Vogue.
Thank you for having me.
We're looking at the Thames, we're looking at the blue sky, and most of all, we're looking at people who've been not able to come to a restaurant for 5 months, eating, talking, and having a wonderful time. And that's what we're going to have, Edward. We had your party.
I know.
Welcoming party to London at the River Cafe to welcome
incredible.
You here. And it was a very beautiful party. I remember something about that night, which was we were talking about whether we could do ravioli as a premie. And there was a conversation saying, well, you know, fashion people don't eat carbs. They won't eat pasta. Nobody's going to eat the ravioli.
They all ate it.
Not only did they eat it, they had
it
seconds,
gone.
Seconds and thirds and put on more ravioli on the plate.
It was a really magical evening, one of the truly magical evenings of my life, because remember the issue came out.
Tell us about
when
that
we were
first,
here.
Tell us about the first issue.
It was a love story, really, to Great Britain, the country that sort of took my family in and took me in. And we celebrated everybody from Naomi Campbell to Steve McQueen to Kate Moss. And we had Adjoa on the cover.
It was a beautiful night. And I think people, you know, again, over food, over wine.
Food.
The food, you wanted to be sharing plates. You wanted people to have antipasti.
There's a misconception that fashion people don't eat, but that's not true.
It's not true. And so what do you feel about food and fashion? Is the idea that in order to look good in clothes, you have to be thin, or you have to look elegant, you have to be a certain look, or models have to look a certain way? And that would mean denial of food. It would say, in order to look that way, don't eat. Yeah, what's that story?
Historically, there was that, you know, to be fashionable, you shouldn't eat. When you look at least my Vogue anyway, it's everybody's welcome. You know, all shapes, all sizes, all colors. And what I love now is 3 years later, when you look in all the other magazines, everybody's also welcoming in all the other magazines. That strict thing of not being able to being a certain size, being size zero is the perfect. That doesn't exist anymore. Mm. Even the idea of being a model's changed.
How?
You can be short, you can be curvy, you can be, you know, you can be disabled.
Mm.
Literally, to watch that industry change, for me, is one of the great things about, you know, doing my job.
Well, do your job, but you made that. You did it out of empathy and sympathy and knowledge of yourself. And so I think that you have to take the credit for that,
in a
beautiful way. But has it been a struggle to get, you make it sound rather seamless that this is what's happened in other men, but has it been a struggle for stores or for designers?
No, I mean, designers now know that they missed out on a whole market. From size 14 to 16, they've missed out.
Mm.
Why would you want to miss out on a section of a population that can make your business even better?
Yeah.
So now designers have really sort of like, oh my God, they've wisened up. Okay, I just knew that the world we lived in just wasn't that world anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be a certain size or a certain color
And,
I love the new generation. I mean,
they're eating, aren't they? The new generation. Abba was here the other day.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
you know, so welcoming and so open. So, you know, the industry's changing. It's not perfect, but at least they're now, you know, what happened last summer, you know, Black Lives Matter. And so now, you know, companies are now realizing, God, they have to hire people from diverse backgrounds behind the scenes and not just... to watch it change slowly, it's quite great. You know, conversations that are being had now never would have been had about 10 years ago. We deal with sort of topics that real women are passionate about.
Because you grew up in Ghana, so tell me about the food of Ghana. What are your memories?
I spent my first sort of 12 years in Ghana, and I remember everything being spicy. Mm-hmm. I remember everything being peppery. I remember, you know, lots of sort of carbohydrates and lots of soups. Lots of Ghanaian soups are very different because you need actual meat in them. Mm-hmm. So like a chicken soup or a lamb soup, you know. I remember just literally chewing through bones and skin, and that's really comforting for me.
Yeah, I think food, you know, we always talk about food being a connection, food being delicious, food being adventurous and exciting, but it is comfort, and it's and the memories that you have. Would your mother cook for you?
So funny, my mother didn't cook so much, but my grandmother did. So growing up in Ghana, my grandmother would always cook, and she would always cook in these huge... I think that's why I love going to restaurants. She would always cook in these huge pots, and she would never cook for just the family. Mm. It would be aunts popping in, uncles popping in. There's something about Ghana. The minute food is ready to go, all of a sudden your aunts and uncles appear out of nowhere. So food for me became sort of a way of socializing as a very, very shy kid. And to this day, you know, going out, coming to the River Cafe just fills me with, I don't know, happiness, really.
Did your grandmother live with you?
She lived with us, and then we moved to England. She didn't live with us when we moved to England, but when we got to England, my brother took over cooking duties. And again, you know, it was always sort of very meaty.
And your mother didn't cook?
She was a seamstress. She was busy working.
A seamstress.
Just busy making clothes. I mean, pretty much kind of what I do now. She just worked all the time. My brother would cook sometimes, and my sisters would take turns.
What about your father?
Never cooked.
I never.
I don't cook either.
And you don't.
Somehow I miss the cooking gene.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I can really eat.
But you have the eating gene.
So you can tell. Eating gene. So you either have one or the other.
I always think if you have the eating gene, very often if you have the eating gene, then you do need to learn to cook, because sometimes if you don't have somebody to cook for you, you're in restaurants, you do whatever you do.
But that's why I love going to restaurants.
Yeah, and that's why you love restaurants.
Food is love, and love is food.
Did you grow up in the city?
I grew up in Ludbrook Grove, West London.
Yeah, and what about in Ghana?
We grew up in the military base called Burma Camp.
Was your father in the military?
So it was really weird growing up in Africa, but not really living in the city, but living in a military base, because my dad was in the army. So it was kind of a surreal kind of upbringing.
Yeah.
And then we moved to London, and we lived... first, we lived in sort of Victoria for a few months, opposite the Chelsea Barracks. Then we moved to Ludbrook Grove, and that's when life really began. Oh, my God, Jamaican food, rice and peas, jerk chicken. Yeah. I mean...
So that exposure, it's interesting how people leave their... You know, we've talked to lots of people in these conversations who say that they had the home cooking for the first, you know, the student years of growing up, their memories of their parents, and then... And then there was a kind of explosion of food and adventure and trying. But did you, before we leave Ghana, did you bring Ghanaian food with you? Was that the food that you still ate when you came to a foreign country? How old were you when you came?
12.
Oh, you were 12.
Yeah, but I remember, I always say I felt as if I lived in two countries. I mean, if anybody who's been an immigrant will attest to this. You literally are at home, and you're eating the flavors of Ghana, and you're having things like fufu and
what's fufu?
It's like a dough.
And?
Garnier was sort of made out of a lot of pulp.
Okay.
So like, you know, cornstarch into pulp with soups. So you're having that. And then the minute you leave your house, you're in England where you have sausage rolls and you have chips and you have pork pie. So I just love this duality. And this duality is really... The person I am today is made from that duality in every aspect of my life. And it started with food.
Yeah.
So in Ghana, I felt, you know, at home I was eating Ghanaian food. I felt Ghanaian, you know, parents speaking Ghanaian. And then the minute I left the house, I would be in England with food that I loved, comfort food. So, yeah, my life's just been like that.
And would you bring friends home to experience Ghanaian food?
I'd bring friends home, but Ghanaian food's quite specific.
Okay.
You either take to it or you don't.
Yeah.
And friends were coming. They always love jollof rice. I don't know if you know what jollof rice is. It's this famous, it's almost like a tomato rice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a competition between Ghanaians and Nigerians. Oh. It's called the Jollof Wars. Who makes the best?
Oh.
Jollof rice. So friends would come and they would eat that.
So it's rice with tomato, did you say?
It's made with tomatoes and spices and sauce. And the color is sort of orange. Like an orange colour. But it's very famous.
And what's the Nigerian version?
Nigerians think this tastes better than Ghanaian.
Oh, but it's the
There's
same.
Literally whole wars going on about it.
I say that.
Jira would have said that.
He would say Nigerian. Would, we'll have to have a little rice off.
And I remember lots of okra and everything. And I never had, I never ate salads growing up. Every kind of, you know, Ghanaian vegetables are always cooked.
Right.
You know, cooked and stirred and beaten to an inch of its life. So eating salads was always...
But would you go to the market? Would there be markets? Would you get off the base?
Oh, my God, yeah. My mother, every Saturday, would take me to Brixton Market. They had a sort of big African...
Yeah.
You could buy meats, you could buy, you know, fish, you could buy clothes. And every weekend was spent with my mum. We were very close in Brixton, and I remember just Bob Marley, the music of Bob Marley and Peter Tosh. That really made up my early teenage years. And then my mum would be looking through the meats, essentially, trying to find the best cuts and the best.
I think that, as you say, every immigrant, my family came from Eastern Europe to the United States, to New York, and they cooked the food of their country. And food is culture.
It's culture.
It tells you the story. When you arrive in a country and you go to the market, it tells you about the culture.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Welcome back to River Cafe, Table 4. In each episode, my guest reads a recipe they've chosen from one of our cookbooks.
I'm going to read the recipe for the veal shin slow-cooked with Barolo and sage. Serves 8 people. You need 2 veal shins, extra virgin olive oil, a bunch of fresh sage, 4 bay leaves, 4 garlic cloves peeled, 1 bottle of Barolo, 350 grams peeled plum tomatoes, drained of their juices, very important. The longer this cooks, the better. You need to preheat your oven to 200 degrees centigrade. Heat an oven-proof pot. Then you season the shins with sea salt and black pepper. Add 5 tablespoons of olive oil and the shins to the pot and fry until brown all over, turning the shins every few minutes. Add the sage, bay and garlic, pour in the wine, put the shins in facing down, add the tomatoes and cover with greaseproof paper. Transfer the pot to the oven. After 1 hour, turn the shins over and reduce the temperature to 150 degrees centigrade. Cover and cook for a further 2 hours, basting the shins a couple of times to keep the meat moist. The veal shins are ready when the meat falls away from the bone. Serve with the marrow from the bone.
Ah, oh, thank you. It's beautifully read. So if all, you know, the recipes that you've cooked from the River Cafe book and that you've eaten in the River Cafe, I think you have had veal a lot, haven't you? You do have it when you come in. But was there something, was it the comfort? What was it that made you choose this recipe amongst all the others?
I mean, I find veal very comforting anyway. I love comfort food, you know, whether it's veal or... I'm definitely a carnivore. But it reminds me great memories of my grandmother and my mother sort of, you know, cooking always meats. And
did they? I think that, as you say, every immigrant, my family came from Eastern Europe to the United States, to New York, and they cooked the food of their country.
Yes.
And I think that you bring, it's interesting that you said that, because you do bring the, food is culture.
It's culture.
It tells you the story. When you arrive in a country and you go to the market, it tells you about the culture.
Yeah.
And you know, as an immigrant, maybe particularly first generation will bring it with them.
We never went to restaurants, by the way. There were so many, there were 6 of us. So I remember the first time I went to a restaurant, I think I must have been about 16 when I started modeling. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this is, what you do here?
Yeah.
I remember being quite frightened.
Yeah.
But
what was the restaurant? Do you remember? Do you remember the restaurant?
It was in Ladbroke Grove, definitely. It was a Chinese restaurant. It had 2 seats. It was next to the tube station, Ladbroke Grove tube station. I can't remember the name. It was really famous. It was there for about 30 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get a little takeaway and you sat. And it wasn't really a proper restaurant, but you sit. You know, you have 3 tables and you sit there, and it felt so. Glamorous.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting. If we look outside here and we see the ease at which, you know, people are sitting in a restaurant where they bring their children. And for me as well, it was a special occasion. Going to a restaurant.
Yes.
I lived in upstate New York. You went for somebody's birthday or anniversary. And I think it's been such a radical change for... You know, for us, that we see the way restaurants are used. And so after that first experience in a restaurant, and you love it. And then what happened?
I mean, I was modeling, so then I started, you know, sort of traveling and sort of having new friends and, you know, living with Judy Blame. And so my whole life changed. But I remember those first few sort of times I ate outside of my house.
And where did you travel to when you were modeling? You were exposed. I mean, where did you get Paris and Italy?
The first place I went to was New York. Mm-hmm. Sort of burgers and...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. New York was so much milkshakes and...
Yeah.
Those huge steaks that they have.
Yeah.
Tomahawk steaks.
Yeah.
And then I'd go to Paris and French cuisine was incredible. I always find French cuisine was delicious, but a little... too heavy.
Yeah, maybe.
And I loved Italian food. When I discovered Milan, I loved Italian food. I loved everything about it. I love Italian food.
Do you see restaurants as places where you work? Do you work over food? Do you?
No.
No. Okay, I like that.
I can never work. For me, to put those two together ruin it for me.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, work is work, and when I'm in a restaurant, I just need to have enjoy myself, not have to worry.
Mm.
So, you know, even going out to a restaurant is very special for me. You see, I always dress up.
You do?
I've never walked into a restaurant and not dressed up.
You're dressed up. So, what is that process?
That sort of idea of growing up, my dad was like, to get on a plane, you have to dress up. To go to a restaurant, you have to dress up. So you never see me in a restaurant not dressed up.
That's nice. I mean, I don't mind what people wear when they come in and eat, or they can come in a pair of, you know, jeans and a t-shirt. But there are people who, and you see, especially in the evenings, you do see people
special.
Who, and I sometimes say that to the waiters. I say, you know, people put a lot of effort sometimes to look really beautiful here. And so we also have, you know, the effort that we make. So what do you do when you're on a shoot or you're working in, you know, do you just say, okay, guys, we'll see you in a couple of hours? Or do you sometimes
eat
outside?
Oh, no, you take a little break and you know. Yeah. You sit and you eat, and then you go back to. I don't eat and look at pictures or anything like
you
that.
Yeah.
I need that moment to sit. It's one of the few times in the day that I have to enjoy myself. You know.
Yeah. Do you find that you can go out to lunch and to dinner?
Yes.
You might go. You just love it.
When I lived in New York for a while. I would be out lunch, dinner, sometimes breakfast too. I just love the whole experience of
love being out.
And I love being out.
Yeah,
I really do.
I do too. Yeah.
I really love it, and I love looking at people, seeing what people are wearing, seeing just people having fun and enjoying themselves. It's almost like therapy for me. It's therapeutic.
Mm. What did you do during lockdown when we couldn't go to restaurants?
The first few weeks, Alec, my partner, cooked, and he's very healthy, so it was sort of salads and sort of meats, and that was great. And then we discovered banana bread.
Oh, tell me about banana bread.
It went out of the blue. Alec learned how to make banana bread, and it was such a novelty. We ate it every single day for a month, and now I can never look at another banana bread ever again.
You don't have
I'm done.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. You started with the comfort of your grandmother cooking for you. And so if I were to ask you the question that I ask at the end of every interview, which is, what is your comfort food? If you were feeling like life is tough, I've had a bad day, I need to eat something, is there a typical food that you would go to that would, you just know, if I have this, it would make me feel better?
So many.
Yeah. You can tell us a few of them. It doesn't have to be one.
But you know, I mean, it something very simple, rice and beans and chicken or something very, just really comforting, because my grandmother would make whenever I wasn't feeling well.
She loved you through probably many ways, but through food.
Through food?
Through food.
My memories of just her cooking.
Yeah.
That's all I remember.
It's wonderful. To visit the online shop of The River Cafe, go to shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
River Cafe Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox